Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. And earlier in the week, we were joined by basketball writer for Sports Illustrated, Rowan Nadkarni. And we talked about the Kyrie Irving situation then. And I was already convinced that the Heat should make a move for Kyrie Irving, David. But
yeah.
You and Rowan kind of talked me out of it there. And then... And I think I even said I changed my mind on the podcast. I don't want Kyrie Irving anymore.
You did.
It's not worth it. And then I kept thinking about it more. And now I think I'm back to wanting Kyrie Irving on the Heat. I think I'm back to the opinion that the Heat should make a move for Kyrie. And the reason for that is because, look, we after this offseason, we had talked a lot about how does Miami get a superstar? They didn't get Goran Dragic. Instead, they re-signed James Johnson and Deion Waiters and then signed Kelly Olynyk, all for long-term deals, four-year contracts. They don't have draft picks for the foreseeable future. They don't have cap space for the foreseeable future. The only way to acquire a superstar is via trade, right? I don't know what other players... Now, Kyrie Irving isn't a superstar yet, but he's 25.
Okay.
He's 25, and he can be a superstar, right? He's really close. I mean, he is electrifying offensively. He's a one-man offense. The Cavaliers had one of the historically greatest offenses ever, and people tend to forget that because the Warriors have been just historically great in all facets. But Kyrie Irving was part of one of the greatest offenses of all time. You could put him on any team, and that offense will get better. I don't know what other superstars are going to become, or players with superstar potential or whatever, are going to become available that the Heat can trade for. Kyrie Irving wants to be in Miami. Miami is on his list of desired destinations. Mm. He's got 2 years left on his contract, which is huge. Usually when stars get moved, it's on an expiring deal, and you don't really know. It's a Paul George situation. You don't really know if he's going to come back. Look, Paul George became available. But Miami didn't have the assets to trade for him. He's got 1 year left. He's probably going to L.A. Guys like Kyrie Irving, players with his sort of superstar potential at his age, with that many years left on his contract, they don't come along all that often. So if we already have decided that the Heat, the only way for them to get a superstar is to trade for one, this is the situation. I don't know what players that are better than Kyrie Irving are going to become available anytime soon. So,
well, that seems to be the debate, right? I mean, whether or not Kyrie is that player worth making that kind of a huge move for.
Is there anybody else, though, if we already understand that the Heat aren't going to get a player in free agency and they're not going to draft a superstar, right, barring anything crazy unless they find the next Draymond Green in the second round or something like that.
Right.
If we already know that, then what player has better potential to become a superstar that we see becoming available?
Well, that's the whole thing, though. I mean, if we had talked about a potential superstar acquisition 3 weeks ago, Kyrie's name would never have come up.
Right.
We didn't know the situation was going to play out the way it did or as quickly as it did. And I think that's what we've started to see, particularly this offseason. Obviously, trades have always been a part of the NBA landscape. In 2005, I don't think anybody expected a Shaquille O'Neal deal to manifest as quickly as it did. It was just, there's some issues there, there's some tension, and I understand it probably wasn't as much of a 24-hour news cycle as it is today. But at the same time, you're hearing grumblings that there were issues in Los Angeles. All of a sudden, Shaquille O'Neal is a Miami Heat player. So as far as potential superstar acquisitions in the future, who knows? I mean,
how many players are even better than Kyrie Irving? Guards. Like, let's just think guards.
I'm playing devil's advocate here because I totally acknowledge that Kyrie has weaknesses, but I think a lot of those are overstated. Like, if you're looking at his assist numbers to point out that he has potential weaknesses as a passer, well, maybe most of that has a lot to do with the fact that, yes, he does hold on the ball a lot, but he also plays with arguably the best passer point guard in LeBron James in the league right now. And that's going to chip into whatever numbers there are there. When he gets the ball, he has to do whatever he can to make an impact because the ball is going to be in LeBron's hands about 80% of the time, or at least it feels that way when I'm looking at the games.
I mean, I wonder what Kyrie Irving can do in a James Harden or a Russell Westbrook situation, which is sounds like he's looking for.
Unleashing him, basically, just letting him do whatever it is that he has to do.
Yeah, and we've heard reports from reporters, I don't know, I can't remember who it was right now, but that people within the Cavaliers organization think that Kyrie Irving has the ability to be one of those guys. I don't know if
Brian Windhorst.
Yeah, that
I think so.
That look, he's probably not the passer that James Harden is, because you mentioned LeBron James being one of the greatest passers in the league. James Harden's right up there too, so he probably doesn't have that ability. But
that's what the Cavs organization is saying, that he has the passing ability, that he even has the defensive chops that he chooses not to. Now that's a concern, but I don't take it at face value. I don't know why they would say that he doesn't want to. Maybe that's souring the milk a little bit, although that's a disadvantage to them because then that lowers whatever package they might acquire in return. So it's kind of weird, right? It seems odd for them to sell him in saying that he has these abilities and then at the same time undercut themselves by saying, well, he just doesn't want to. It's like, well, why would I want that on my team, theoretically? So it's a kind of... There's so many different angles and drama issues taking place here, whether or not there's the issues with LeBron, whether or not LeBron's camp leaked it out. So much to kind of unwind here and unpack about the whole situation. But I think a lot of Heat fans are kind of debating whether or not he's the player worth acquiring. There's some issues there with whether or not he's kind of overhyped. Mm-hmm. The fact that he plays in Cleveland and has helped LeBron to win a title in Cleveland, I think, has soured a lot of Heat fans about acquiring him. And whether or not he's the kind of guy that you can build around, too. So as far as I'm concerned, like I said on the podcast a couple of days ago, I'm not sure that I want him on the team, not because I doubt his abilities or his ability to manifest on the team, to manifest or to realize full potential. I don't know. I kind of enjoy the style of play that we saw last season in the second half of last season, and I appreciate what Goran Dragic brings to the table. I don't know if Kyrie could coexist as well or efficiently alongside Dion Waiters. Obviously, that's an experiment that they had played out in a couple seasons ago in Cleveland and didn't work out quite as well. Would they have to scrap the style of play that Miami has utilized over the last season? I mean, it makes sense, right?
I don't think so. If Kyrie really does have... Kyrie is one of the best finishers in the league. I mean, if you think about what Goran Dragic does, Kyrie Irving is... They're very similar players. They like to attack the rim or shoot threes. They don't really tend to take a lot of mid-range shots, even though they can do it. And they're average defensively at best. So, but Kyrie Irving is 6 years younger, 5 or 6 years younger, with way more potential. I think you could keep the offense on, and I've heard that can you pair Waiters and Irving in the backcourt? We've already seen that didn't work out in Cleveland. They were both very different players when that was happening, and even if they can't exist, does that matter a whole lot? Because December 15th rolls around, and then you just trade Waiters, right? So, and then you could get assets for him, and then you get off of a 4-year contract, and maybe you start to rebuild around Kyrie Irving, and that would be kind of the idea if you get a superstar, or if we all recognize that Deion Waiters does have all-star potential, which you and I agree he does have that potential, then all of a sudden maybe you have one of the best backcourts in the East. So, look, I understand that we have to debate Kyrie Irving and his plus-minus numbers. Without LeBron James on the floor are bad, right? And that's what a lot of people say. Kyrie Irving is just riding LeBron's coattails. Look at what he does when he's not on the floor. But if we remember when LeBron was in Miami, a lot of lineups without LeBron James
struggled
really, even when Bosch and or Wade were on the floor. I mean, I'm looking at the 2014 stats right now, plus minus. Yeah. When LeBron James wasn't on the floor, the team was minus 0.9. It's not a huge difference, but when you compare how good that Heat team was to being that to having a negative plus minus when LeBron was off the floor, that's a pretty big swing. Especially because when LeBron was on the floor, it was a 7-point plus minus. So, look, I get that those stats are damning, but I also look at what Kyrie Irving did against the Boston Celtics in Game 4 when LeBron James had foul trouble and the Cavaliers were down and LeBron was on the sideline because he picked up too many fouls and Kyrie Irving took that game over. Look, I'm a stats guy. I'm not one of these Charles Barkley guys that says that advanced stats don't matter. They do matter.
And they do.
It is concerning that the numbers are that bad when Kyrie Irving is on the floor without LeBron. However, what I saw from Kyrie Irving against the Celtics, it relieves that fear for me. Because I looked at that and I say, you give this guy the ball, you put him in control, and he can make things happen. He can win you playoff games by himself, which he basically did. Because LeBron wasn't playing well even before he was sidelined with foul trouble. So Kyrie Irving won them that game against the number one seeded team in the East. That's a big deal. So this guy's got potential. If you're the Heat and you need a superstar, I don't know when a guy like Kyrie Irving is going to come around. You're right. Maybe somebody comes around next week. Somebody demands a trade. Who knows? The NBA is crazy. But we don't know that that's going to happen. You have to pounce when the opportunity is there. If you're Pat Riley, this is your MO, man. Like, go get the guy. If you can. I don't know. Now, we could talk about what the market for Kyrie Irving will be, and you believe that it's not going to be the market that everybody thinks it is. And now I'm starting to agree with you a little bit more, because if it was a hot market, maybe Kyrie would have been moved by now, because we're coming up almost a full week since the report surfaced. But it's been it's been 2 or 3 weeks now, almost 3 weeks.
Since they knew about the request in the first place.
Right. So, look, if you're the Heat, I like Zach Lowe's trade for the Miami. You offer Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, Wayne Ellington, and you say, this is what we can offer you. We've got nothing else to offer you. This is what we have. We'll give you an all-star level point guard in Dragic. We'll get you an elite wing defender in Justice Winslow with a lot of potential. And we'll give you Wayne Ellington for three-point shooting. And then you take Kyrie Irving and Shumpert off of Cleveland's hands. I think... That's the deal if you're Miami that you offer, and you just hope that Cleveland doesn't get a better offer than that, right?
Well, I mean, we've already heard some grumblings that Phoenix is not willing to include their 2017 draft pick Josh Jackson in any kind of potential deal. Denver seems like an interesting option. They've got a good mix of youth, you know, young players, also potential draft picks and stuff like that. New York, another team that he's been linked to or was one of his preferred destinations, it doesn't seem like they have much to offer, although I think they've done a pretty good job this offseason of trying to rebuild some of their assets there, despite the contract to Tim Hardaway Jr. I don't know. It's very difficult. Look, I mean, if there's anything that we've learned from this kind of scenario, it's that people are going to overvalue the players that they know best or appreciate best. We have no idea what Cleveland is looking for. They haven't stated anything. If anything, we've heard that they're willing to kind of force a reconciliation there, that as far as they're concerned, he's on the team. They expect him to be on the team in a few months when training camp opens. You and I are both pessimistic about that. We think it's kind of BS, to be honest with you. I don't really see any kind of scenario where they keep Kyrie, because if he said what he has and he really feels as strongly about it, then that situation, that locker room, as much as they already walk on eggshells, it would be even twice that, or three times
at
that.
Least.
It would be disastrous.
You know? That is such a big decision. He's got to be sure when he asks for that trade, right? That's not just on a whim that you're like, you know what? I'd like to be a Westbrook of a team right now. Like,
right.
To leave a championship team, a team that's been to the finals for three, you've got to be damn sure that you're ready to get out. And look, everybody, there was backlash against Kyrie Irving when it first happened. How could you ask for a trade from this team? We're supposed to like winning. And like I said earlier this week, we've bashed players like Kevin Durant and LeBron for pairing up with all-star players with other superstars to try to win a championship, and now Kyrie Irving basically does the opposite. He's with right. two other superstars, and he's like, no, I want to do this on my own. I feel like I can compete with my own team, and we bash him too. People want it both ways. I can't. And now I feel like people are starting to come around to Kyrie Irving a little bit more and say, look, if he believes that there's another level to his game that he just can't reach when he plays with LeBron, why wouldn't you want to do that? If you believe you can be the best player on a championship team, but currently that you're being saddled as the second fiddle, then why wouldn't you want to escape that and try
regardless, to reach your potential? Even if the championship isn't necessarily a goal, it's just a place where he feels comfortable right. playing at a higher level or a different level. I mean, look, we've right. seen LeBron in 4 years in Miami, how much he controls nearly every aspect of the team on and off the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he defines everything. And maybe it was less of that in Miami than what we've seen over the last three seasons in Cleveland. But the reality is he's still affected the way that things happen. You know, the players that you sign, he changes the way you build a team around his singular kind of talents. And that's draining. Look, we've heard one of the things that he wants is stability from an organization. And we understand that. Look, like they fired David Blatt. They hired Ty Lue. They've brought in a number of players here and there, guys on towards the end of their careers to try and rebuild something or compete for a championship. It's difficult to have that. Every year you go in there thinking, well, who am I going to be playing with this season? You know, we're going to trade half these guys. Who do I have to connect with, you know, at that point? And for LeBron, because he controls that situation, it doesn't matter to him. He's going to be able to force anybody to play alongside him as opposed to the other way around.
So he might be going to LA anyway.
Right. Yeah, there's also that possibility. So I completely appreciate and respect his decision to force a trade or request a trade. I believe Cleveland's going to make something happen, whether now or within the next month or so. Either way, as far as Miami's concerned, I don't know. I still contend that I don't necessarily want him here. Not a knock on Kyrie's abilities. I would love to see him play in Miami. I just don't necessarily want to sacrifice the chemistry that we've currently built. Or do I want to see Goran Dragic playing alongside LeBron James in Cleveland and then have to be there while that team falls apart next season after he departs to wherever he goes?
Just a quick break to remind our listeners about the survey that David and I are running. Go to tinyurl.com/LOHeatSurvey to find it. We're asking our listeners to participate so that we can improve the show as we head into next season and learn more about you guys and how we could better serve as your Locked On Heat podcast host. So go to the that website, tinyurl.com/LOHeatSurvey. We'd really appreciate it. It takes a minute to fill it out. So again, tinyurl.com/LOHeatSurvey, and we'll include that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of responses, which we totally appreciate that. Keep them coming, because there have been some really nice suggestions there, and mostly positive comments, which I was really surprised at, to be honest with you. I thought a lot of people would say replace that David guy or something along those lines, but no, it's been somewhat favorable. So,
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
All right, so you brought up the fact that Phoenix might be hesitant to trade Josh Jackson, and I'm glad you brought that up, because look, if Miami's offer is something like Dragic, Winslow, and Ellington for Irving, and will take Shumpert off your hands, right? And Cleveland badly wants to move that Shumpert deal for the last year. They've been wanting to move it, according to reports. If Phoenix isn't going to add Josh Jackson into that deal, if they're not willing to include Josh Jackson in a trade for Kyrie, they're not left with a whole lot of options that are better than what Miami can offer, right? Because you could trade Eric Bledsoe. Is he better than Goran Dragic? Maybe when he's healthy, but that's the problem. He's had what, four surgeries in the last four seasons or something like that? He's an injury-prone guy. Yes, everybody makes the link. He's part of Clutch Sports, which is the agency that LeBron James's friend Rich Paul controls, yes. And that LeBron has an interest in. And that is a worthwhile link to make. But at the same time, if LeBron is planning on possibly leaving Cleveland, does he want to put Eric Bledsoe there?
Right. It's another situation.
It could go either way, right? So,
how long does Bledsoe have left in his contract? 3 years?
I think it's 3 years at 14, 15 million, I want to say. And Phoenix has to move Bledsoe, but I just don't know that that's – I don't know that that's a better deal if you're Cleveland than what Miami is offering. They can offer Bledsoe and – draft picks. They can offer Miami's draft picks, which are unprotected after this next one that goes out next year. So you can offer Miami's draft picks or one of them, depending. Eric Bledsoe, injury prone Eric Bledsoe, and what, TJ Warren or something like that, and maybe get in that conversation. I don't think that they're willing to move Dragan Bender or Marcus Chris. They just drafted both of those guys in the top 10. Maybe they're willing to include those guys, but I don't know. Maybe they're not. And if they're not, they can't offer much more than what Miami can offer. And then you look at Minnesota, another team on Kyrie's list. Oh, and Phoenix isn't on Kyrie's list either. So they might not. Phoenix might not be comfortable trading for Kyrie Irving if one of those young guys that they control for Kyrie Irving, who might just up and leave in 2 years anyway. And then if you're Minnesota, yeah, Kyrie, you're on Kyrie's list, but you've just made the deal for Jimmy Butler. You've traded away several assets to get him. Not a whole lot, because Chicago, the guard packs are very, they're very bad at their jobs, but you did trade some assets. And you might want to see where this thing goes. The only thing that you can really deal is Andrew Wiggins, and I think it would be a mistake for Minnesota to include Wiggins in a Kyrie Irving deal, because I think Kyrie Irving's got superstar potential, but so does Andrew Wiggins. Both of them are 20-plus point scorers. Wiggins has a lot more development to go, plus all his defensive upside is so much greater than Kyrie Irving's. It's just a mistake to trade these two-way players for one-way players. I'm not saying Andrew Wiggins is better than Kyrie Irving right now, but I don't think it's that far apart where you have to make a move, especially if you're Minnesota, that has plenty of young talent there. They're not desperate for young talent. So when you, on paper, these guys have more to trade, but when you really kind of get down in it, they might not be willing to offer a whole lot more than what Miami has to offer. Miami's desperate. They're on Kyrie's list. I think it starts to make more sense when you kind of hash it out like that.
Yeah. I mean, let's look at what, you know, they could potentially want. Do they want to go in a full youth movement? I don't necessarily think they do, because I think they're still expecting LeBron to remain with the team next season, despite all the rumors and innuendo and everything else. So they're probably looking at continuing to follow the model that they have over the last three seasons, which is a win now mode. And if that's the case, I think, with the exception of Bledsoe, Goran gives him the best opportunity to kind of take over that. Look, Derrick Rose is a nice piece, maybe in a reserve role. I don't think they're expecting that team to depend too heavily on him. They still need a starting quality point guard over Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
And I think Goran Dragic, at this point in his career, is still better than Derrick Rose.
And Dragic has experience playing the two-guard spot. You could play both of them in that backcourt, too.
Good point. Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely potential there for that. He can shoot, he can drive to the hoop. There's a lot he can do. I think he's learned how to kind of sublimate his game a little bit and blend in with whatever players are on the roster. So I think he has the potential. I'd feel terrible for that, but I think for the opportunity to compete for a title, it might be something that's interesting to him. So that's a great piece for there. You can always use more shooting. So if you acquire a piece like Ellington, that would be great for them as well. So you have already a starting quality point guard that's better than Derrick Rose. You also have a shooting guard in Ellington. And then not only that, but you have defensive issues that you need to address, and Winslow certainly can take care of that. So
absolutely.
I think on paper, it almost looks like Miami has the better package, to be honest with you, because it gives you not just youth. I mean, Ellington is not that old. You still got 2 years left of Goran's contract, but still you want to develop a piece. Look, let's say LeBron does leave. You still got a starting quality player and Winslow that you can slide into the three if LeBron does eventually leave next season. So it's a good deal for them. You add youth, you add defense, you add shooting, you add playmaking ability. I think it's the best overall package. A lot of people will say maybe you'd want another draft pick, et cetera. But I think, I mean, the acquisition of Winslow is almost like getting a high draft pick already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are issues there that need to be resolved, particularly his shooting. But overall, you get incredible playmaking. You get incredible athleticism. I don't think you're going to get that anywhere else. And look,
Winslow could play. LeBron James had to guard Kevin Durant on one end of the court in the finals and then be guarded by Durant or Draymond Green or Klay Thompson or Andre Iguodala. Right. On the other end, Winslow would give Cleveland that Andre Iguodala type where maybe he Absolutely. Comes off the bench, can guard the best player on and give LeBron a break, because look, he's going to need it, especially if he's making up in part for the absence of Kyrie Irving on offense. It makes a lot of sense. Wayne Ellington, of course, would thrive with LeBron James kicking out to him. I mean, can you imagine that, especially with how much he's developed even at this stage in his career in Miami last season? You carry that Wayne Ellington over into Cleveland, he could be a real asset for you. Wayne Ellington probably would have, last year's Wayne Ellington probably should have started in the finals for Cleveland, you know, with the way J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert were playing.
That's a good point. And look, and LeBron's played alongside Ray Allen, so it's not like he doesn't recognize those sets that Miami ran for Ellington last season. He could incorporate those. If Ty Lue has anything to add as far as the offense is concerned, I'm sure that would be a certain aspect that it could certainly incorporate.
Cleveland would also save almost $4 million in that deal.
That's not bad. I mean,
for a
I know
team
they
that's
don't
way
the
over
money.
The luxury tax, and if you're Dan Gilbert, $4 million turns into a what?
Screw Dan Gilbert.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying you're Dan Gilbert. I just said if you're Dan Gilbert, God forbid. But yeah. I mean, if you're already $22 million over the tax, which they are, $4 million becomes. I don't know the math off the top of my head, but that multiplies into a lot of savings, right? Even if you're just saving $4 million. So that deal would also make some sense, right? Like, and, you know, if you lump Shumpert into that deal without the cost of a draft pick, teams typically have to attach first-round picks to dump bad contracts like Iman Shumpert, right?
Right.
So if Miami doesn't take a draft pick back from Cleveland, but still takes Shumpert, that's sort of like equal to a draft pick, sort of, you know, in a weird backwards way. If you're Cleveland, and that offer's on the table, and that could end up being the best offer, but we'll have to wait and see. I don't know, but. It sounds. No. I've already said I'm flipped. I've decided that if Miami offers that and that's what it takes, I think you pull the trigger on that for Kyrie Irving. And now I'm a little confused as to where you are now.
I really don't know. Like I mean I love Kyrie's ability as a singular talent. I also love the chemistry and teamwork of the second half of last season. And I'm curious, much like Pat Riley has said publicly, to see whether or not this is, you know, replicable and whether or not they can do it again this year. So I'm loath to kind of break that up after it was so much fun to see. I understand that this is a question I'm also entertaining as we're talking here. You acquire, let's say that is the package that Cleveland accepts. You trade Dragic, Winslow, and Ellington for Kyrie Irving and Iman Shumpert. Is Miami better or worse this season with Irving there?
You've got, if that's the deal, right?
Yeah.
I think the projected starting lineup at that point would be Kyrie Irving, Dion Waiters, Josh Richardson, James/Rodney McGruder, depending, but I'd probably go with Richardson.
Sure.
James Johnson and Hassan Whiteside, with Olynyk coming off the bench, as well as Shumpert, right? So Shumpert could come off the bench, and Magruder.
Yes.
Right? Am I missing anybody else? I don't think so. Bam, I guess, depending on how many minutes he plays. As a
Tyler rookie. Johnson.
O'Carroll White, another versatile guy. Oh, Tyler Johnson, of course, is your backup point guard in that situation. So you got Irving, Waiters, Josh Richardson, James Johnson, and Whiteside as your starting five. Tyler Johnson's your sixth man. Kelly Olynyk comes off the bench. Could either play some stretch four for you or spell Whiteside when Whiteside goes to rest on the bench.
Yeah.
We got a mailbag question on Monday about, is 49 wins a reasonable expectation for that Heat team? With this roster, I'm not sure. But if you get Kyrie Irving, the ceiling for this team is way higher than it is now. I'm with you. I want to see what the chemistry is. I want to see if they can carry over the success from the second half of last season. And obviously, Pat Riley and the Heat do too. That's why they re-signed the entire team back, with the exception of Willie Reed and Luke Babbitt.
But the floor is lower too, though. But I would say the acquiring Irving makes the floor lower.
I don't know if it does.
Because I think you'll have some struggles there. I really think. Look, I think it'll be a blow for everything I'm going to write something about this soon, because I mean, it's a topic you and I have discussed a number of times. I think the undervaluing of Dragic has gone on for years now, and I think there's something to be said about the way he plays and sacrifices himself. The guys, like, for this particular team, that is kind of leaderless, that means something. I think he's just as much a leader as anybody else on the team, but it helps to have guys like James Johnson or Dion who believes he's a leader, and Hassan that has some ego issues, et cetera. I mean, it's a great fit there. I don't know that Dion's going to normally take as much of a seat back as we'd want him to with Kyrie holding the ball. Can he play together?
Yeah. There's a lot of egos on that team.
Yeah, what happens there with Hassan? I mean, is he comfortable after he just got to know? Does he see himself as the kind of superstar that can form a big two with Kyrie? I mean, there's a lot to break down there, and I don't know how it'll play out. So I mean, it could go very bad. I'm not very badly, let's say, but they could be a 35 to 40 win team, I think, if they struggle to adjust right away. And look, we're talking a long term growth that's exponentially higher with Kyrie on the roster, but at the same time, there might be some growing pains this season, and it could be a struggle. It could be. Now, it could be, as you said, a team that competes for 50-something wins, maybe. That's realistic,
too. The ceiling is higher, right?
It is. It is. No doubt about it. I mean, you're going to get games there where he's going to win. He's going to win games for you with his offense. I mean, there's going to be times there at the end of last game. Oh, let's say last season, the ball was often in Deion's hands when he was healthy, if you needed a big shot. What, during those first 41 games when Deion missed a lot of time, when they were finding their own way, there's not going to be any of that. Kyrie's going to say, give me the damn ball, and he's going to go to work, and he's going to get you 30-something points, probably, because he can do that. The fact that he didn't do that as often last season was because there was the presence of LeBron James or Kevin Love there that needed the ball in their hands. But with this team, if you insert Kyrie there, I could see him going just crazy and trying to take as many shots. His usage will go significantly higher than it was last season, and he'll take over games, and he'll win a few of them. Now, he might shoot you out of some games, too. That's a potential aspect. But I think this team with Kyrie would probably win more if things blend well right away and everybody learns their role. And that's another thing, too, man. They, you know, between him and Deion, the way they butted heads, I'm just not sure if Deion's going to be willing to say, yeah, I've played with Kyrie before. I know what it takes. I'm okay with that. Especially when Kyrie's stated goals, or at least reportedly stated goals, are that he wants to be the leader of a team. Is Deion going to be willing to accede to Kyrie all of a sudden, you know?
Right.
It's
and if he's not, then you, like I said, you trade him. But then,
yeah, but as far as the short term this season,
right,
things are badly.
Exactly, because now you're missing out on the 7-11 duo in the backcourt that works so well together. You've just shipped both of them out, essentially, depending on what you would get back in that hypothetical for Deion Waiters. But you've basically shipped both of them out for Kyrie Irving. Is that better at that point? We've already recognized the Heat have to trade for their superstar, and Irving's got that potential, man. And you see what Russell Westbrook did in Oklahoma City with nobody. You see what James Harden did in Houston with no other superstars last year. You have a point guard, if you have a superstar point guard, you can go along, you can win 40 plus games with that alone. With that and good coaching, that makes a huge difference. And I think guys would come and play with Kyrie Irving if he had a year to kind of prove himself as a numero uno, as an alpha dog. And I don't know. I just everybody says the NBA is a superstar league, and if you don't have one, you got to try to get one. And I just don't see any other routes for Miami to get one right now. And that's I'm with you, man. I like Goran Dragic. I don't want to see him go, but if that and I still think Winslow's got a ton of potential and can be one of the premier wing players in this league. He's got that kind of ceiling, but if you can move those guys to acquire a talent like Irving, I just almost think you have to do it at this point. So anyway, we should we'll see how that plays out. We do need to talk a little bit about the two signings that Miami made. Matt Williams out of UCF, they're $50,000 guaranteed, what amounts to a guaranteed training camp contract. We'll see if he ends up being the 15th man on the roster. And then Derek Walton Jr., who wasn't on Miami's summer league team, a true point guard out of Michigan, Miami has signed him to one of their two-way contracts. So he'll play mostly with the Sioux Falls Skyforce, and I imagine in Walton Jr.'s case, if Goran Dragic goes down and misses time, or if Kyrie Irving goes down and misses time, then at that point, that's when you call up a guy like Walton Jr. and you allow him to maybe play some reserve point guard minutes. What are your thoughts about Miami's two signings that they made this week?
It's a great opportunity to add depth there. I think it gives them some nice young skill sets that they can develop. We've talked about Matt Williams before. We love his shooting. There's potential there for him to make an impact, and I think in the G League he's going to get some really nice looks there, and I think he's going to be able to score quite a bit. I could see him being a guy. Now, he's not on a two-way deal, right?
Matt Williams is not.
Yes. Okay. So he's a guy that other teams could pick up at some point throughout the league, the season.
No, because right now he's only on a training camp contract. So, or right now he's got $50,000 guaranteed, which I think Miami pays by the start of the regular season.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure how it works out, but he is the 15th man on the roster right now, and it's very cheap to dump him if they want to, which could end up being the case.
But he could be optioned off to Sioux Falls as well.
Exactly. So what they could do is kind of feel him out in training camp and preseason. Then you cut him and then re-sign him as a part of Sioux Falls, or you restructure that contract and turn him into that two-way, that second two-way contract, right? Because the Heat have two-way spots. So there's a few options with Matt Williams. But as of now, he is the 15th guy on the roster.
Okay. Yeah, I think he needs a lot of work, as you and I have talked about. He brings elite-level shooting for sure. He can do some other things offensively. I think defensively is where the issues are, particularly for Heat culture, but especially at the NBA level as well. So I think getting him repeated minutes and having him be coached up. Look, they saw something in him. He's a real smart guy. He was injured in Orlando, so unfortunately I didn't get a chance to see a lot of him up close, but we've seen enough from Vegas, and you saw him at UCF. There's potential there, so it's a nice fit. As far as Walton's concerned,
let me talk about Williams a little bit, because
go for it. I know you want to.
Go Knights. You mentioned, he's got defensive issues. I think he also has offensive versatility problems. Like, he's basically a catch and shoot guy. There's not a whole lot of dimension to his offensive game, and that's going to have to improve too. He's going to have to learn how to take guys off the dribble at the NBA level. He's not the most athletic guy, but he's got good size. So if he could take a guy off a dribble, two or three dribbles and pull up from somewhere else in the mid-range when guys are aggressive on closing them out, that could be really valuable. And, of course, learning how to move the ball in an NBA offense. I love my UCF Knights, but I would not qualify that offense as an NBA offense. So, yeah.
I mean, he's got traditional point guard size, though. He's not really particularly tall either.
Yeah, he's like 6'4", but, he's a strong kid, right?
He's built well. Yeah,
So I look at him, if he sticks this out as either the 15th guy or one of these two-way guys, or even just goes to the Skyforce next season, but is in Miami's system, Ellington's contract expires at the end of this next season. So if Ellington becomes too costly to retain, and he might, right? Because Miami doesn't have a whole lot of cap space.
Or if you trade him to Cleveland.
Or if you trade him to Cleveland for Kyrie Irving. Then a guy like Matt Williams could become very valuable, where you get him in the system, you just make him the Wayne Ellington of the Sioux Falls Skyforce. teach him how to play that role for a whole year and then move him on up into the – I mean, that's the way that these two-way contracts or the G League, the developmental league, is supposed to be used. I really like the strategy behind it. When you look at all of the guys that competed in Summer League for the Heat, there aren't a whole lot of them that have even one NBA skill. Matt Williams was the exception. He's got a lot of work to do on his game overall, but he is an NBA-level shooter right now. He's right. got an NBA skill. He's got at least one. Now, if he could develop the rest of his game, he could become an NBA player. But as of now, he was probably Miami's best bet from Summer League to make the roster, and it seems to be the case. Derek Walton Jr., too, I watched him at Michigan. He's a gamer, man. I was really excited when I heard that Miami signed him to a two-way contract. I love getting a true point guard as a two-way. That's what I had expected that they were going to do. I didn't think that they were going to sign a true point guard as a reserve behind Goran Dragic because they have so many ball handlers on this roster right now. They don't need it. But I did think that one of their two-way contracts would go to a true point guard. That's Derek Walton Jr. He was the man on a very talented Michigan team. Four-year player. We know that Pat Riley likes those kind of guys. Undersized, that hasn't bothered the Heat recently. You look at guys like Tyler Johnson and Magruder who are undersized for their positions. Shoots threes really well, just like Matt Williams. Passes the ball, sets up teammates well. He's a leader. I like him.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I saw him in Orlando, saw him walking around. He didn't stand out as far as his overall size is concerned, and I didn't really notice him standing out with Orlando. I was mostly looking at Jonathan Isaac, to be honest with you. So I don't know. I can't really say much. I didn't really see an opportunity there for – I didn't have an opportunity to see him at Michigan either. So if you like him and you think he can contribute, he's a guy who will definitely be a G League player, right?
I think he's going to spend most of his time in Sioux Falls, yeah. Guys on two-way contracts can play up to 45 games, NBA games. They can play unlimited amount of games in the G League. But on two-way contracts, they could play up to 45 NBA games, so which is why I say if Dragic were to go down with an injury, then at that point you just call up Walton Jr. because at that, you're going to need – he doesn't start for Dragic, I would imagine. But you're going to need probably a point guard to come off the bench and take some of those minutes. And that's where I imagine Walton Jr. would play a few NBA minutes. Or maybe you just, you know, early in the season, or in the middle of the season when you're trying to give some guys some rest, you call him up, play him for 5 or 6 minutes at a time just to get his feet wet and just continue to groom him that way. So, but yeah, he's mostly going to spend his time in the G League.
Who is Goran's backup at this point?
A combination of Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson and Deion Waiters, if they split those minutes up to where Waiters is going to play more without Dragic, and maybe he becomes the de facto point guard when Dragic is on the bench. But at that, I think it's James Johnson. You know what I mean? Like Dragic is off the floor, and they're probably just going to put three guards out there plus James Johnson, Justice Winslow. I mean, they've got so many ball handlers; it'll probably be like it's like backup by committee.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. To support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.